knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born. May all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life the child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Okay, so it's good to see everybody coming here on a Monday night, just to just meditate together. Meditation is a very important thing for us monastics, and that's something that we, that's what we dedicate a lot of our times to. And I think that's one of, for monks, that's one of their favorite things to do, is to meditate. And so over the years, monks, we've learnt a few tips and tricks on how to calm the mind down. And I was thinking about it today while I was meditating, and as we're meditating, what we're trying to achieve is to be able to engage ourselves into this moment. As people who meditate, we have certain meditation objects that we like to watch. Some it may be the breath. For the kids, it may be your iPad. Does your mum let you use the iPad?
I use an Xbox.
Xbox is even better. It may be metta meditation or just being in the present moment. And yes, we all know what that is. We do know what the breath is. We do know what the present moment is. But the one thing that makes meditation quite delightful and pleasant is to be able to engage fully with the present moment or with the breath. And it's been said, like in psychology, when we're doing something that we love to do, whether it's reading or we may have a few hobbies, playing sports, playing the Xbox. Do you have an Xbox? Do you have a PlayStation?
No, I share.
You share? And I remember I was talking to one of the monks when he used to play games with his brother, and when he would beat his brother would get so mad that he would virtually pick up his brother and throw him in a room and lock the door. Do you do that to your brother? No? Very good. Well, anyways, so this idea of getting into the flow of things, and it's been reported that when a person gets into this mind state, they could be doing something for many hours, but it seems like a few minutes. And that state that they get into is quite enjoyable and quite pleasant. And in the same way, when we are able to engage our minds properly with our meditation object, we find a sense of delight and a sense of peace, a sense of connection between ourselves and the object. And that's what I think, as meditators, that's what we can also come to understand when we're meditating. There is the person who's watching, and there's something that you're watching. Sometimes the person who's watching, that person is always there. That person can be thinking about work, or thinking about the future, or thinking about the past. The watcher is always there, in a sense. But when you know that you're thinking about something, you're not really engaged with the present moment. You're not really engaged with the present moment. But when you start to engage with the present moment, when you feel that connection, you can start to see all those those thoughts, those worries, they slowly disappear. And Ajahn Brahm would like to use a simile of watching the TV. You're watching the TV screen, but you can also say, just to bring it up to a modern ideas, when you see people traveling on the train, and they could be on the train, there's heaps of people around, their seats on the left, their seats on the right, there's people reading newspapers, there's people chatting. And there's all these things going on. But then, as you pull out your smartphone, and you start reading a news article, or I don't know what else you guys do on your smartphones, check your emails, play your favorite game, or whatever, the whole world seems to disappear when you're focused on that one thing. You don't see the person sitting on your left. You don't really hear the conversations around you. You don't even see the person sitting opposite you. But everything just seems to vanish. And in the same way, when we're working with this mind, and we're trying to understand what is going on, just to picture having something in front of you and all these things around it just slowly vanishing off the edges of the screen. And you can see, when you're engaged with your meditation object, whatever it may be, you can see these thoughts just they come in in from the side. But because you're engaged with the moment, then these thoughts they sort of fall away. They don't really capture your mind, and instead of having the watcher just getting lost in thoughts, the watcher is actually becoming more engaged with the object of meditation, and always over the years listening to Ajahn Brahm teach, he's always got these nice tips and tricks that one can turn their minds to, and that's to put awareness, or put energy into the knower, the one who knows. Oh, I'm sure you heard about that before. Yeah? The one who knows. So just energy into the knowing, whatever's happening now. Put mindfulness to it. Put your awareness to it. So, you know, the mind may be drifting off to the left or to the right, but you bring that mind back and put it into the awareness. And what happens is that starts to build up. It gets stronger and stronger and stronger. And that's all meditation is, basically, is to just build up this ability to be aware of every moment while you're meditating. And it's sort of like you could say it's building a like a house of peace. You know, a house of peace doesn't get built straight away. It gets built, you know, brick by brick by brick. And you start off with just the basic first layer, and then you just work up towards the wall, and then you get the other walls up, and then you put the roof on, and you end up with this beautiful house, something that you can go and live in. And in the same way, we're trying to search for like a sense of peace or a sense of contentment in our meditation practice. And we think, oh, how can we get there? Or what can we do? And you're searching for some sort of answers. You come here and you listen to the monks, or you read a lot of Buddhist texts. Yes, that's all very helpful, but it's quite basic, actually. It's just starting off with this simple idea of just putting the awareness into the knower and just doing that a little bit at a time, repeating the process, and just keep on going and going and going. You know, you'll be amazed at how your mind changes and transforms. And I do understand, just by meeting a lot of people and having conversations with them, that this mind of ours can be very difficult to tame. Yeah, our minds are racing all over the place, and we've been meditating for many years, and it doesn't seem to work. And it is true, you know, I've spoken to people and they've told me, and I'm like, yeah, I guess that's the part of life. And sometimes you can't really help it, but at least you're here trying to work on your minds to be able to, you know, make it still, make it quiet. But what happens is, after a while, you'll start to... I think one of the main things that helps the development of the mind is you'll start to enjoy the process of meditation. You start to enjoy just sitting down, being in the moment. You start to value how this thing works, and you start to put in the right causes for that peace and for that happiness. And like I said earlier when I started off this talk, it's always important to be able to engage. You can actually feel a sense of connection with the meditation object. You know, there's a oneness happening, and when you're in the moment like that, there's nothing else in the mind. There's a lot of like peace, a lot of silence, a lot of stillness, and I think for people who do have difficulties, what may be happening with their minds is that there's just too much thinking going on. It's like churning and churning and churning. So we've got to find a way to be able to just bring our minds back into the moment and understand what that feels like, and one understand what that experience is like. You know, what it is like to be in this moment, like right here, you know, right now. With the mind not moving, but it engaged, just even with the silence in the room or the present moment, and just being able to just build that up and build upon it, and then things starts to become very pleasant, and your mind starts to become a lot more energetic, and the meditation becomes like you could say effortless. It becomes automatic. And it's just being able to just see what's happening with your mind. You know, investigate, understand what is a mind which thinks a lot. Understand what is a mind which is sleepy or which is restless. And with all that information that we gather, we can actually start working with our minds. And I always like to say it's, you know, the meditation practice is, it's more, it's not like a science or it's not a mathematical equation. It's more like a trial and error. And every time we meditate, there's a different hindrance or a different difficulty. It comes up in our minds, and whatever we experience, we try to learn from it. But then you get to a point where you don't really need to focus on the problems of the mind, but you understand that you just focus on the good things that happen in the mind, and this mind's ability to be in the present moment, or to be mindful, or to be still. If you can lend your mind in that direction, a lot of these problems, they figure themselves out. You know, wisdom, like your wisdom starts to arise. Your thinking changes, which makes your life a lot easier. Your thinking changes in the way where it moves in the direction of letting go more letting go. Because a lot of times we just hold on to things, we think about things too much, and that just puts a lot of weight on our minds. And because of our old way of thinking, we find it very difficult to let go. But I think as soon as we understand what peace, stillness is, a bit of quietness in the mind, something shifts in our minds, and our mind, our thinking changes. It's like, well, why am I holding on to this now? And there's no point in holding on to it. All it's done for me is caused me suffering and a lot of headaches. And then you start thinking in that way, and then you go, oh, yeah, there is no point holding on to it. So you start to let go. You start to throw it away. And you find reasons not to hold on to things, because you want to protect, in a sense, your own peace of mind. Now, that's very important. I think if people experience some peace in their minds, they'll do whatever they can to protect it. And in a sense, you're playing a game with your own mind. Because it is true. It's not the world that is causing us suffering. It's our own minds. So that's the you know, one of the lovely things about the Dhamma is that you hear the Buddha, wherever he went, whether it was north of India, south of India, whether it was cold, hot, whether he was hungry, he could do that with a peaceful mind. And I think what that is pointing to is not the external environment that we're living in, which causes us our turmoil or difficulties in the mind, but it's what's happening inside of us, inside our big heads, little heads. Yeah. And that's one thing to remember. And it's not only in the meditation, but in life in general, when when we get upset with somebody. Yes, they may have said something to upset you, have done something to upset you, but the more you remember it, the more times you're allowing that person to hurt you, and you start to understand that, hey, they've said it already, it's been 2 or 3 days, but I'm still holding on to it. So the suffering didn't come from, the suffering sort of like triggered by them, but the continuation of it is basically caused by our own minds. And it's been said, I think, by many, many, great teachers, it's always our internal makeup which causes us happiness or suffering. And it's really up to us to work with our own minds. And like I'll keep on saying is the less stuff you have in your mind, the more happier you become. The more stuff you have in your mind, oh, life is gonna be hard. But you know, you gotta live life and learn from your lessons. It's good to see two young boys here. Do you like coming here?
Yeah.
It's good to start young. You can, so when you get older, you'll be smiling. You know you're smiling now. When you get older, you'll be smiling some more. So if you practice this path, you just get happier and happier and happier. And it's not like a religion where you have to come in and bow. You know what I mean? It's more of a practical thing. How you live life, how you treat people. And like always trying to get on the good side of parents. So I always tell the kids, listen to your parents. But it's good. Good, you know. Anyways, we should start meditating. So, as we're meditating, we're just engaging our mind with this present moment, with our meditation object. This ability to feel a connection from, you know, the person that we see. You know, there's this person that sees and feels life. We try to connect that person to the present moment or to whatever's happening now. You know, this person that hears the traffic. This person that feels the temperature of this room. You know, this experience, or in Buddhism, it's called consciousness. Just trying to, you know, direct this mind or this consciousness. Just connect it with this moment. So being able to sit down quietly, we're giving ourselves a gift away from all the responsibilities in our lives, the gift of having a break from the life that we have to live. It's wonderful to be able to just take time out. And just to be able to, just to be. who are just being able to know as well, like putting, just being able to know what's happening now. It's not, you know, rocket science. That's why kids can learn how to meditate, adults, doesn't matter what age you are, because it's something really easy to do. Because it is true, we live in a society where we've forgotten how to just sit down and know. Just know the present moment, know what's happening now. We're living in a society where we don't give ourselves some time out. So all you're doing in this meditation is to just know whatever is happening right now. Know this moment. So just know the sounds in this room. Sounds like somebody sleeping. Know the quietness as well. So when you're meditating, you just try to keep things simple. And, you know, there's no need to struggle or try to force the mind. into stillness, but always have a relaxing attitude towards whatever's happening in this moment. Also, you know, the t-shirts that you see, keep calm and carry on, or whatever. That's what we're doing here. Just keep calm to whatever's happening right now. So if any of you are having difficulty with your meditation, the nice thing to do is to just bring the attention to this, into this body. So one thing we can start to watch, start to know, is the sensations in our feet. If start to feel the pressure or the pain, the tightness in our feet. And then we can move that awareness just up our legs, we can start to feel the pressure and the weight of our body against the bottom of the chair. You know, the bottom of our thighs, how does that feel? All this is just allows your mind to basically focus on something. Just like if you're focusing on your emails or focusing on the road as you drive. What we're doing here is just allowing our minds to focus on something so that we don't think too much. Into our backs, just feel the pressure, like there's a lot of pressure that can be felt in this area if we're sitting down in a chair. We just feel the pressure just pushing up against our backs. If we have any aches or pain in our lower back, we can give it a mental massage or something like that. We can just run our awareness like into our stomachs. Start to feel what's going on. Are our stomachs empty? Are we feeling a little bit hungry? Or are our stomachs full? We just had dinner. Is there a tightness there, or is it relaxed? Is it bloated? Some of us have bloated stomachs. What's going on there? So as we're meditating, we're just trying to just to experience some peace of mind. If your mind is quite peaceful at the moment, there's no need to focus on the body, but instead focus on the peace. What I mean by focusing is not pushing your mind onto it, but just being aware of it, receiving the information of what peace is like, is an experience. It's something that we can know. So we can place our awareness on our shoulders. Yeah, some of us, our shoulders could be a little bit tight or a little bit stressed out. It's something that we can easily put our minds on. Does is help focus the mind on something so that you don't have to think too much. But as meditators, trying to find that space in our minds where things start to become quiet. Things, when there's quietness, a whole bunch of thinking is absent. That's where we're trying to get to. it starts off by just being able to make a connection with yourself and this moment. It's very simple, but the more you do it, you start to see your mind start to transform. And that, you know, that the idea of a lotus growing out of muddy water is something that you can use to compare your mind to. It starts, your mind, you know, when you first start meditating, it's difficult, it's hard. But as the mind grows in the, you know, in the Dhamma, in the meditation practice, it grows, but it grows from a difficult place. But what grows is beauty. Beauty in the form of a lotus flower, which is the mind. Looking at it from a sense of peace growing within the mind, compassion, loving kindness, stillness. That's the beauty that lives within our own minds, which is basically there. But all we got to do is allow it to grow. And by allowing it to grow, we just have to be able to just be in this moment. Have faith, have trust. The longer you stay in this moment, that lotus will start growing, and then you'll start to see the beauty of this, you know, why we meditate. Any comments, questions?
Brother's not here.
Huh?
Brother's not here.
Rob?
Rob.
Bob, yes, he is.
Bob. He's over there. Oh. The five hindrances. No. No questions, no comments, no complaints. Want to go home? Miss your bed? Yes, Sarah.
It's true, as you what you say, because I think I've had a few days now not meditating. Mm. But I find, because I do it quite often,
I can
get into it quickly.
That's good.
You don't have to wait so long to calm down.
Well,
not calm down, but your mind will just go with you.
Yes.
Because you do it so often, you know.
Yes, that's correct, and that's very, very true. Yeah, because like you hear these great meditation masters, they've been practicing for so long that, you know, it doesn't take them very long to get into deep meditation. So basically, you know, their minds are ready,
yeah,
ready for meditation because they do it so much. Yeah. Nothing? Nothing else? Well, anyways, I was just reading a sutta today, and I was thinking, oh, can I remember it so I can share it with you? So basically, yes, I do remember it. It was a very short sutta, but it was basically about, some of you may not like to hear it, but I'll continue. So basically, it's about five things which helps. I think it was like a group of monks or just people in general. Five things that help us meditate. You know, helps with the meditation practice. And five things which is a obstacle to our meditation practice. And I didn't say this, so don't get upset at me. You can get upset at the Buddha because he said it. Okay, first thing he said was being old. I'm not saying about you guys, but he said being old, but you can understand where he's coming from. He said, like, being old can be an obstacle to a person's meditation practice. And and I think, yeah, and he said it's basically because of the energy levels. If you compare the energy levels of a young boy, so you got more energy than me, so technically you can meditate a lot more than I can. And to compare to like a younger person and towards an older person, it's not finding fault with old people, but it's just how our bodies are made up. And even Ajahn Brahm was telling me that when he was a younger monk, he found it very easy to get into the deeper meditations, but now because he's older and because of his energy levels, he finds it does take time, but he can still get there. So for all you young people, practice hard, eh? And so that's the first one. The second one is basically to do with our health. And the Buddha talked about, in the time of the Buddha, when they were to describe somebody's health, was to talk about a person's digestion. So if a person's digestion is good, you know, they're passing food on a regular basis, that is considered a healthy person. But if a person has, you know, digestive problems, that's when, you know, a lot of people say that's where a lot of our sicknesses come from. And also, you can understand, yeah, you can understand the point the Buddha was trying to make, that if we have sicknesses in our body, whether it's digestion or having a cold or having a headache or whatever, that also is an obstacle to the meditation practice. Yeah, so that's the second one. The third one is, what's the third one? Oh, the third one is like if you know, living in the time of the Buddha, it was very difficult for monks to find food. So if we were in some sort of famine, and I was thinking, oh, you know, how can a famine be an obstacle to one's practice? But I don't really know, because I haven't starved myself. But you know, there's people. I'm sure there's people in this room that has been without food for many days or even weeks, and I can't imagine that their minds are always on food. They're thinking about their next thing to eat or thinking about what they can drink. But because we haven't been in that situation, we don't really understand. But I think that is why. It is an obstacle for us, is because we can't get the idea of getting something into our bellies. So being in a famine is an obstacle, but we don't have that trouble. In fact, we have the opposite trouble. There's too much food here. Okay, and the fourth one is, I can't remember. Well, another one which is very, very important is if the monastics are, if there's like a schism, like there's fighting within the monastics, one monk doesn't get along with another monk, yeah. And you hear stories in the suttas where the Buddha would describe it as monks throwing verbal daggers at each other. And even in the time of the Buddha had difficulty trying to settle these conflicts within monks. And, you know, we're talking about the Buddha here with all this wisdom. And he got to the point where he couldn't fix the problem, so he just went off into the forest and had a retreat. So you can understand that if there's difficulty within the community, within the monastery that we're living in, or within our families, or in our lives, that too can be an obstacle to our meditation practice. So it's very important to live in harmony with one another. And that all starts from just basic, you know, the way we talk to each other, as the Buddha would say. What is it? Right body, mind and speech. The three things, you know. So how we talk to one another and how we think about each other. It's greatly influences how we live with each other. And if we live, like, you know, if you live harmoniously as a family, it's a good family. There's a lot of contentment there. If you live harmoniously, like in a monastery, the monks get along, and when we meditate, we're not thinking about other monks. Oh, I don't like you and you don't like me. So that that happens, you know. We don't live in a perfect world. So that obstacle is taken away. So it's very important. And these are the things that we can sort of like have control of in our lives. So those are, I just told you four, I forgot the fifth one, but it's kind of interesting. And basically the other things that help us with the, so they're the obstacles. So if you look at the opposite, those are the things that help you with your meditation practice. So living in harmony, not having conflict at work or at home, and having a healthy body, and living in a place where we don't have to think about food all the time, you know, things like that. Jumping into our time machine so we can be 40 or 30 years old again, so we can be young and full of energy and meditate for a long time. But yeah, you never. But you know. Yeah. So that's it for me tonight. Any more questions? No? Very good. Finito. Are you on holiday? School holiday?
Yes, last day.
Okay. Or you're like, yay, I get to do maths again. I get to do science. No? Okay. Take it away, Bob. Take it away, Bob.
Through the wisdom of my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guiding spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent, or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain their threefold bliss and realize the deathless through the goodness that arises from my practice. And through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease, and all harmful states of mind, until I realize Nibbana in every kind of birth. May I have an upright mind, with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge, and surpasses the protection of the Dhamma.
That's all I can do. It is my noble Lord. This anger is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and delusion be destroyed.